JC Corcoran Podcast.
Hello, St. Louis. This is Leslie Nielsen with a message for JC and the Breakfast Club. Good luck. We're all counting on you.
And there he is, the man live from New York.
Great Scott. Who was that?
That was you. We actually had the pleasure of meeting 10 or 11 years ago on the set of The Naked Gun. It was a great time.
You caught me. Yes, indeed. That had to be me, right?
Absolutely. And when I hear you talk, Leslie, when we hear you talk, it's just amazing. You hear those pipes. And I know that you did some radio a long time ago, but I think I know something about you that a lot of people don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong. Yes. Did you not spend some time in the Royal Canadian Mounted Police?
No, my father did.
Oh, it was your dad.
My father was a Mountie, yeah. He was on what they call detachment. That's where I spent my childhood, or why I spent my childhood, up in close to the Arctic Circle.
Well, what was that like, and what are your recollections of the Arctic Circle as a young boy?
I remember snow. A lot of snow. And I remember our favorite game. My brothers and I would play hide-and-go-seek. And we really enjoyed it because we, not so much the game, but we like to hear somebody saying, "You're getting warmer."
He's been waiting years to use that line. I love it.
He's been stored up. Yeah.
Did you lay yourselves open?
And by the way, how far into the conversation do we go before we hear the little sound effect that you seem to take everywhere?
A sound effect? What are you talking about?
Almost every interview that we've ever done,
What are you talking about? I don't understand.
You can tell me.
I'm a doctor.
I'm a doctor.
You know, we have the Oscars on Monday night, and with all the hubbub about Titanic, people will remember that you were in the Poseidon Adventure. You didn't last long, but you were in it early.
That's when I looked up and said, "Oh, my God." And that's because I saw that water up there 800 feet above my head coming down on that poor little ship. Yes.
That was a hell of a picture,
Poseidon Adventure.
What do you get paid for something like that? You're in the movie like 5 minutes. You have one line. What do you get paid for something like that?
God, I forget. It was not a hell of a lot, I'll tell you. I remember I did that picture, and then they had their schedule had me sort of like in the beginning, and then at the end of the picture, I was able to go to Australia and do a television appearance, a show down there, and come back and complete my engagement on the Poseidon Adventure.
Unbelievable.
I was happy to be in that film, and I enjoyed it. And the thing is that it didn't make any difference as far as the part was concerned, because people remember it, and they also remember I was in it.
Sure.
That's about all you can hope for.
We had David Zucker in the studio with us about a year ago, and we were talking about, obviously, the original Airplane movie. And it was kind of interesting because when you got the script, and when people like Lloyd Bridges and Robert Stack got the scripts, you guys kind of had an interesting reaction. I had heard that some of the actors thought, you know, like, wait, what do you want us for? You want comedy actors.
Not for me. the moment when I got that script, I told my agent, I said, "It's a comedy. Don't negotiate on this, except whatever they give to you. I will pay them to do the script, but please don't tell them that." And that was my attitude about doing the role of the doctor. I was yearning, just waiting to have a chance to do comedy. And this was my kind of comedy. And I know that we were talking about it the other day. Peter Graves was a little, he wasn't quite sure about the flatulence in the cockpit when he ate the fish, and you know, your lower digestive system collapses, you know, it disintegrates, followed by uncontrollable flatulence. As I'm describing this to Julie Haggerty as the doctor, this is what happens when you eat the fish. And there were things that, you know, he was wondering about. Robert Stack has got a fantastic sense of humor. And Lloyd Bridges, well, look what Lloyd did. He went on from there to
Hot Shots and all those other movies.
Hot Shots, and he just finished another picture with Jim Abrams. But we always had fun doing the thing, and we knew that it was funny because when you screened it in the screening room, it was on a bigger screen, and people were falling on the floor.
Yeah, well, in the meantime, people can get more of you. It's Leslie Nielsen's stupid little golf video.
Yeah.
Available all over the place. Look for it in video stores. And, of course,
24th of March, yeah.
And of course, whenever Airplane is on, you drop.
We're watching it.
Well, you drop everything you're doing and you sit down and you
get
sit
in the crash position.
And you get in the crash.
Yeah. Assume crash position.
Leslie Nielsen. Leslie Nielsen, thanks very much.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Now I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
Thursday, April 27th, 2023. You are at jcontheline.com. How you doing, kids? It is the aforementioned JC speaking at you right now. I don't know what made me play that. I just watched Airplane again, oh, maybe two or three months ago, and it was almost like seeing it for the first time. I hadn't watched it in a while, just sat there and just laughed and laughed and laughed. But the other thing is, you know, when you start talking about interviews, and people still ask me a lot of stuff about interviews because I've had the opportunity to do so many. And one of the reasons I like playing that one is because it's on the very short list of people that we have interviewed on the show who were just absolutely the greatest ever. You know, there's this short list, as I said, and he might be at the top. I don't know. There's just so much joy in his personality. There was, obviously he's not with us anymore, but there was so much joy in his personality. He loved what he did so much, and he didn't care if it sounded like he was just, you know, absolutely in love with show business, but he was, and he was full of the devil, because in addition to that, that was a satellite interview. He was in New York. We were in St. Louis, but I had the opportunity to interview him in person a couple of times, and he was just great. He was just so much fun and such a nice man. And again, you think to yourself, what are the odds? You know, he's living in the Yukon because his dad is like Dudley Do-Right. I will save you now. I don't know if he ever ran into Snidely Whiplash. And by the way, when I was a kid, I think everything I ever knew about Canada came from the Dudley Do-Right segments on Rocky and Bullwinkle, and then maybe a little bit of hockey. You know, you watch hockey, and, you know, the Blackhawks, I grew up in Chicago, so Blackhawks would play in Montreal or Toronto, and you would notice little things that were different about the way they did things on the other side of the border. So that was always fun, but really, my education about Canada pretty much came from hockey and Dudley Do-Right. But Leslie Nielsen, what a wonderful guy. The other thing that sort of made me think of running that interview today was that two-hour Carol Burnett special last night. Now, I didn't see a whole lot of it, but I saw enough to see that they really did a nice job on it. That was odd that it was on NBC, considering Carol Burnett was always on CBS, even going all the way back to the days of the Gary Moore show when I was just a little boy. God. But, you know, another guy like that who just enjoyed every single second that he was in show business was Tim Conway. And people forget about this, but back in the 80s, the Sally Jesse Raphael show used to shoot out of the production studio at Channel 5. So when I went to work at Channel 5 in 1985, you know, her whole staff was right there down the hall. They were right next to the sports office, where at that time it was Jay Randolph and Ron Jacoby. Well, no, Ron was already gone. Who else was there? Jay Randolph? Maybe Mike had come in right about that time. But anyhow, so I would see the Sally Jesse Raphael people all the time. I kept firing on the cutest producer that they had over there. She was so cute, and I fired on her and fired on her and fired on her, and it wasn't until a couple of years later I found out that she was gay. I'm like, wow, I was wasting my time there, wasn't I? But I digress. So what would happen is the Sally Show, which was obviously syndicated nationally, they would bring people in all the time for theme shows and stuff. And they had Bob Eubanks came in. They had Pat Sajak came in. And Tim Conway, the three
big ones that I recall. And we would always contact them and say, hey, look, you don't start shooting until, I don't know, like 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning. Can we grab these people on our morning show at like, you know, 8 a.m. before they go over to Channel 5? Can we have them on the radio show? And most of the time they said, sure, it's free publicity. So that's how we got, you know, Bob Eubanks in the studio and Pat Sajak in the studio and Tim Conway, who for whatever reason was absolutely floored by what we were doing. Now, keep in mind, it's fucking Tim Conway, okay? Guy's been on TV at this point, and we're talking about 1984, 1985, right in there. This guy's been on television for like 30 years. He comes in to do our radio show, and you could tell that he was just sort of looking around like, we go to commercial. He goes, you guys do this every day? This is what you get to do? And we're like, yeah, why? He's like, well, we don't even have anything like this in Los Angeles where I live. And you get, this is fantastic. I mean, he was really, really genuinely having a good time. So, you know, we take pictures and everything and we part ways. And, you know, back then you didn't have the internet, so you couldn't say, give me your email address. You know, when I asked for Tim Conway's phone number, he's not going to give it to you. So we just, you know, we just parted ways. But I had forgotten that he asked what the phone number to the studio was. And so sure enough, maybe a week or two after Tim Conway had been in St. Louis, he starts calling something called the hotline, and that was for radio station management. And almost nobody knew that number. It was like a secret, and only they had it. And if you did something that was just really egregious, they would call you on the hotline, and there was a little red light that was connected to it, and that thing started flashing. It was usually bad news. You were usually in trouble. So that was it. Then we had something called the warm line, and the warm line was the telephone line that we would give to, you know, potential guests. Somebody like Jay Leno's going to call in from Los Angeles. Okay, Jay, here's the warm line number, and then he would call. It would come right into the studio, because otherwise it would go to the switchboard. We didn't even have anybody on the switchboard until like 9 o'clock in the morning. So you had this warm light. So Tim Conway had that number, and he starts calling us from all over the country. It's just like he would just pick up the phone in his hotel somewhere. He's on the road. And just call up.
Hey, it's Conway. How do you say, guys? Just called to annoy you.
How are you doing?
None of your business, actually.
Now, I saw you on Entertainment Tonight. Who interviewed you?
I have no idea.
They made you stand outside in the cold, we saw.
Well, those guys were annoying. Yeah. Listen, I sincerely have told everybody after I left your studio and was totally embarrassed on what you want. It's a very unique show, and you guys are unique and funny, and I really do appreciate you just even allowing me to come on. No kidding. It's sensational what you guys are doing, and I hope that someday
we get paid for it.
You get paid for it.
I mean, come on. You know, you can tell when somebody's pulling your chain, but he was genuinely taken by what we were doing. And the long and the short of the story is that Tim Conway had a son who was maybe a little younger than we were at the time, and he is one of the top-rated morning radio guys in Los Angeles now. And I often wonder whether or not Tim Conway went back home and said to his kid, what do you think about radio? I'd like to track him down someday and ask him whether or not, like, when did that actually enter into the picture? The idea of doing radio someday. Jerry Springer just checked out. We found that out maybe an hour or so ago. Jerry Springer, it's like one of those games you can play. First thing you think of when you think of Jerry Springer, lowering the IQ of the United States of America, being the former mayor of Cincinnati, and writing a check to a hooker, which some enterprising young reporter started digging around through his records and said, while you were the mayor of Cincinnati, we have found a check that went to a prostitute. You care to comment on that? And he segues into arguably one of the most famous, notorious daytime talk shows. But did it really do anybody any good? And then, you know, every day for 45 minutes, it's people just hurling epithets at one another and throwing stuff at each other and, you know, people fighting and, you know the whole story. And then he would come out in the last 2 minutes and do Jerry's final thought, you know, to try to put some pretty little bow on the whole thing. It's like what you just saw was 45 minutes of raw sewage, and now we're going to try to put a little frilly red bow on top of everything to make it all okay. And some people fell for it. Jerry Springer, I believe, was 79 years old. Jordan Walker is another one of those stories that the insiders didn't get. You know, every newspaper, every radio sports station, every TV station, they all have Cardinal Insider, and then they introduce the guy, the Cardinal Insider. And isn't it amazing how when a major story hits, everybody seems to get it all at the same time? If you're an insider, why didn't you tell me about it yesterday? You're a Cardinal Insider. Anyhow, Jordan Walker going down. Apparently, what they're saying is he's doing fine. I think he was 4 for his last 10. He wasn't doing anything wrong, but apparently they saw a flaw in his swing, and they're looking down the road 5 or 10 or even 15 years. They want him to be one of the prolific hitters in Major League Baseball. So, all right, you're 4 for 10, you're doing fine, but apparently he was getting on top of a lot of pitches and just beating them into the ground. He was hitting a lot of ground balls, and they didn't like that. So I'm not even really sure what the point was supposed to be to have a 20-year-old kid come up and just completely circumvent the whole Cardinal system, have him skip AAA and everything like that and go right to the major leagues. Especially, you know, when you start thinking about Rick Ankiel, because he was, I think, 19, and one day he just winds up and starts throwing balls into the press box. I feel a ton of pressure watching a playoff baseball game. How'd you like to be standing out there with 50,000 people all screaming, a lot of them screaming at you instead of with you, and you're standing out there, I'm 19 years old. It just doesn't seem like a good idea. And so, again, I'm not really sure why they chose this route for Jordan Walker. All I know is he's going to Memphis, and they're going to try to have him work with some hitting coaches and see if he can get under the ball instead of over the top of the ball and just correct stuff like this before it becomes a problem. You know, trying to undo something is much more difficult than just learning to do it right the first time. So Jordan Walker will be enjoying the lovely heat and humidity of Memphis, Tennessee for at least the next few weeks, couple of months, who knows. He'll be back up and probably back up soon. Speaking of baseball, it was 41 degrees at game time at Wrigley Field last night. They're playing a night game, and the people in the stands were dressed like they were at a Bears playoff game at Soldier Field in January. Man, did it look cold out there. But the reason I would bring it up is because of those these skull caps that they have now. I think I got my first one maybe about 10 years ago. Why did it take so long for somebody to come along with the idea of this thing that pulls over the top of your head? Because almost all the players were wearing them last night, and you've seen Cardinal players wear them too on real cold days. It's one of those things that pulls completely over the top of your head, and then there's like a little circle that you look out of. So the thing is completely over your head, over your ears, and over your neck. Why did it take so long for the clothing industry to invent these things? They're miraculous. They're incredible. And that's how men shop, too, you know? It's like, I'm cold. Give me one of those things. Now I'm not cold. You know, again, like we've talked about this before, like they say in Sweden and Norway and places like that, there's no such thing as bad weather. There's just bad clothing. But you watch one of these, you know, old movies like A Christmas Story, which is set in primarily the 1950s. And, we all had those sort of wool coats. And if you played in the snow in a wool coat, you'd freeze to death because the snow just went right. I mean, you're just wearing a wet coat eventually. And I don't know how that was supposed to do any good. Well, then, of course, they started coming up with all these, the space age technology and then the invention of Gore-Tex and all these other fabrics that are, you know, that can repel moisture and keep you warm. I bought a Land's End coat probably 20 years ago, and I still have it. It's one of the best winter coats I have. And it has like an entire lining of plastic inside. When you put it on, you can actually hear the plastic sort of crinkling inside. But you know what? It'll keep your ass warm. My sister actually worked for Land's End back in the 1980s. And I used to get the employee discount, which I think was 60% off. I think it was about 60% off. So I would be buying stuff all the time. I was buying clothes I didn't even need because it's like you don't want to pass up a bargain like that. 41 degrees in a night game, 6 blocks off Lake Michigan. Not my idea of a good time. The Tucker Carlson story continues to dominate news coverage, and it sounds like there was apparently a board of directors meeting for the Fox News Channel in whatever that home company is called, I always forget. But apparently Tucker Carlson was in the newsroom, in the Fox News newsroom, throwing around the C word, no pun intended, liberally. And people were getting pissed off. Even the men were like, Jesus Christ. And, you know, it just became like one of those situations where it's like, all right, look, you're just more trouble than you're worth. And the others are, yeah, but what about that massive audience? Yeah, it's the biggest, most popular news show on cable. And, you know, isn't that going to hurt? Not exactly, because all of the blue chip advertisers, you know, Pepsi and Coke and Nationwide Insurance and even the Ozempic people, none of those people would advertise on the show. And pretty much Tucker Carlson's entire show was being fueled financially by the fucking MyPillow guy. And the MyPillow guy is a frequent guest on the show and on the station. And people were like, wait a minute. So the show was not making the money that another kind of show might have made if the content was a little bit more acceptable on a mass basis. And the other thing they said is that he was sort of operating independently. He just was bypassing management and just sort of doing things. The whole show, they were all just doing things on their own. They didn't seem to have any interaction with anything else regarding the station or the newsroom or anything like that. And somewhere along the line, Rupert Murdoch said, plus you're denying the January 6th thing. You know, it turns out that Rupert Murdoch might actually have a heart after all. I wasn't sure that that was the case, but you got a guy here who's running a network that, you know, admittedly is pushing conspiracy theories and right-wing politics and lots of stuff that really wasn't helping the credibility of Fox News. But even Rupert Murdoch said, hey, wait a minute. You can't be going on saying that the January 6th thing was a bunch of tourists. So, you know, maybe it's one of those deals where it's a straw that broke the camel's back. A lot of people are speculating that Tucker Carlson may go the Joe Rogan route. And instead of going on network TV, something that you would watch on television, it'll be something you'll be watching on your computer, and that maybe he can make that work somehow. Because when you start looking around, you go, well, where else would they bring him on besides OAN or Newsmax or one of those other places? But not going to bother me. All right, this story got quite a bit of attention yesterday, so much so that people are still talking about it today. And we're talking about this phenomenon where married couples do not sleep together in the same bed because of snoring or talking or sleepwalking or hogging the blankets or whatever the case may be. And apparently it's much more prevalent than people thought, which brings us to Kent, Airhead, and Tubby in a segment that could be titled Too Much Information.
I want to drill down just for a second a little more on one of those three main factors that Kent just told us leads to a broken sleep routine, a BSR. A restless or snoring partner. That was the first one he mentioned. So people in relationships are all over social media right now talking about sleep divorces. The idea here is that people are sleeping separately from their partners to get a better night's sleep. TikTok is littered with more than 355,000 views for the hashtag sleep divorce. Reasons range from snoring to stealing the covers to differing schedules. Experts say that there could be benefits to a bedtime breakup, particularly when one bed partner has a sleep disorder like insomnia, or when there are just stark differences in opinion when it comes to things like temperature or TV usage at night.
Or the fan.
Oh, right. Yes, but barring any of those serious problems, sleeping in the same bed is actually better. They say you release oxytocin and other chemicals that they call the cuddling hormones. Aww. That can actually be good for your mood and the relationship too.
And you have talked about you and Katie sleeping in for a rent room.
I have never said that in public.
Yes,
I would
yes,
never bring
that is
up
a lie. Wow.
That is
yes,
such
you
a
have.
Personal thing. I
yes,
can't
you
that
have.
You would share that on television.
Wow. Yes, you have.
Unbelievable.
If I knew how to pull footage, I would do it.
If I only knew
that you would do that. Yes, we do, because our schedules are so different.
Yep.
That it just, there's no way I cannot make noise. Now, here's the thing, too. It's a two-way street because she doesn't want to wake me up when she gets into bed later. Mm-hmm. It's impossible to go to bed absolutely silently. You've got to open the door. Yes. You've got to find your way around. You've got to climb into bed.
The bed's going to move around a little
bit. The bed's
going
to move around, yeah, and there's going to be some noise. She doesn't want to disturb me at night. I don't want to disturb her in the morning. We're fortunate enough to have an extra bedroom mm-hmm. that she sleeps in during the week. And then during the weekend, it is on.
On what exactly?
I'm just saying.
I don't want to know.
No,
I don't want to know.
But no, I mean, that's just the only way that we can.
I get it.
It works.
Hey, our own Paige Holsey, and I asked her permission to make sure I could say this, says she has never been sleep married to her husband. Not ever.
Why do I have this feeling that that segment is going to have repercussions? I don't know. Call me crazy. I'll tell you what'll screw up your sleep traveling to the other side of the world. And that's what we did exactly 33 years ago today when we arrived in Russia to do a week of shows from Radio Moscow and the streets of Moscow. And again, this is another one of those stories that was reported inaccurately. What happened is that we made our announcement that we were going to do the show from Moscow. And apparently, KMOX was thinking about doing the exact same thing. So when we made our announcement on the classic rock station 93.7 KSD back in the day, KMOX rushes out a news release and blankets the city with the idea that KMOX is going to do the first ever broadcast from Moscow. We're like, no, you're not. We are. But see, the Post-Dispatch and the media in St. Louis, they didn't want us to be the first ones. So they just chose not to report it. They just chose to report the KMOX version. So we fly to Moscow. KMOX flies to Moscow in the same week. And the day before we do our first show from Moscow, KMOX has Bob Hardy on a telephone line who just sort of called in and did a couple of segments over the phone, and that was it. The following Monday, we do our show, but we're doing the entire show. Everything we do is from Moscow, and it's not over a telephone line. It's over a satellite connection, so it sounded clear as can be, and it was, in fact, the first show. But again, that's not how it was reported, and it's par for the course, considering the Post-Dispatch and St. Louis media in general. But boy, oh boy, you go to the other side of the world, and then you try to figure out. I remember when we went to Hawaii. Oh, Jesus. We took 80 listeners to Hawaii back in, I believe it was 1988. Boy, radio was fun back then, because you could do things like take 80 listeners to Hawaii and broadcast. And it was on this date, 1976. 76. I have all my planners going all the way back to 1982, but this one stuck out because I had physical trace evidence of this before I had this idea of holding on to all my yearly planners. But it was 1976, and a guy I was working for in Rockford, Illinois, we all got fired and because they changed the format. And I was sitting there in Rockford, and he's like, well, why don't you come to Flint, Michigan with me? So, in fact, I did. I didn't last there very long. I think I was there 3 months. I think the day I got there, they announced the unemployment rate in Flint, Michigan is something like 22%. You know, they called it the Auto City because, well, Detroit already had the Motor City. But in Flint, that's where they built a lot of the car bodies and things like that. And then they would ship that stuff to Detroit. Now you got a body, hook it up with the Motor City, need a motor. But the car industry was in the shitter in 1976. And you want to talk about a bad looking town. You know, it wasn't until 10 years later that the movie Roger and Me, the first movie from Michael Moore, came out. And I'm thinking to myself, he's not making any of this up. This is exactly what it looks like. This is exactly the problem. Flint, Michigan was just one of those cities that could not pull themselves out of the economic nosedive, mostly related to the auto industry. Roger and Me, what a movie. I can take about this much of Michael Moore. And then it's like, no, 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 that's enough. But Roger and Me, as far as I'm concerned, was a brilliant piece of filmmaking. All right, people are thinking Aerosmith is going to be announcing a farewell tour because their logo is showing up at arenas around the country along with the phrase, peace out. There's also a countdown clock on their website that expires on Monday. Live coverage of the NFL draft starting at 7 o'clock tonight on ABC. The Carl Poole karaoke special with James Corden tonight on CBS. Late night, Drew Barrymore and the lovely Lizzie Kaplan. I'm with Jimmy Fallon. I love Drew Barrymore. I mean, she lifted her shirt for David Letterman back in the day. And Lizzie Kaplan, who basically spent, I don't know, it was like three or four seasons of Masters and Johnson. And she played Virginia Johnson. And like I said, for like three or four years, had her shirt off. And I dig that about her. Jimmy Kimmel's got Chris Pratt, Harry Styles, and Will Ferrell on with James Corden. Amy Poehler on with Seth Meyers. Meghan Trainor. Now, let me tell you about this kid, because I'm all about that bass, about that bass, about that bass. It's like, you're white! And then, yeah, I know you're lying because your lips are moving, that song. And now she's got a song called I Made You Look. My daughter, who's 13, was listening to Dean Martin the other night. So she likes a lot of music that's even older than the stuff that I listen to. It's a very, very long story, okay? So she's 13, she's listening to Dean Martin. But she does like a lot of contemporary music, too, and is really pretty much obsessed with Meghan Trainor. And I told her, I said, if she goes on tour again, not only will you go, I'm going to go with you. I think the kid is really talented, but I will tell you this, I think it's her producer. That's the guy or the woman that I want to meet is the person producing for her, because they really make her records sound different than anything else that is out there. So she's doing a podcast the other day, and this morning now is being slammed because it was people were like, well, that's dirty, and you're supposed to be clean because you're Meghan Trainor. But she was complaining about the size of her husband's dick. And the fact that for her, on occasion, it is painful to have sex with the guy. So now you got all these parents with these like little 9-year-old kids who love Meghan Trainor who go, Mom, what's a big dick? Freddie Mercury's personal possessions are hitting the auction block, including a mustache comb and handwritten lyrics to Killer Queen. Ed Sheeran continues to defend himself against the Marvin Gaye estate. Yesterday, one of the defendants fainted in court. And I knew there was something up with this. I knew it. It turns out, and I got to really think about this to come up with an explanation. But only half of the people who are buying vinyl albums actually own record players. Now, at first blush, that makes me say that they're collecting these things because of the album art. Yeah, that used to be one of the most fun things about buying albums. And yeah, the convenience of CDs and streaming audio and iPods and all that's all great and everything. But, you know, it takes away that experience of taking that album home and just examining the goddamn thing, looking at the album art, flipping it over, reading the liner notes, just holding the thing in your hand and looking at it as you're listening to the album, maybe with a pair of headphones on. All that's gone now. It's all gone. So people must be longing for those days so badly that they're buying vinyl and not even playing it. They're just buying it for the experience of holding the album. I knew something was wrong with this story about people buying vinyl albums. All right, birthdays today. Lizzo, 35. Sheena Easton, she takes the morning train, you know. 64, Ace Frehley, and I believe that is the correct pronunciation. For years we said Frehley, and that's wrong. From Kiss, 72. Kate Pearson from the B-52s is 75. Ringo married Barbara Bach, his co-star in the blockbuster movie Caveman, on this date 42 years ago in 1981. And one of my all-time favorite rock and roll stories happened on this date in 2006 when Keith Richards was hospitalized for a mild concussion after he fell out of a palm tree while vacationing in the Fiji Islands. Doctors had to drill a hole in his skull to drain a blood clot from his brain and had to remove part of his skull in a second operation after part of his brain collapsed. There is absolutely nothing I can add to that story that would make it any more bizarre or interesting. A Florida man killed and dismembered his Uber Eats driver. Yeah, I know how he feels, man. I hate to tip, too. And the Container Store said it will accept Bed Bath & Beyond coupons. That's great because now I can buy a container for all my Bed Bath & Beyond coupons. And with that, the J.C. Corcoran podcast for Thursday, April 27, 2023 is in the can. We are here every weekday morning at 11. Spread the word if you can. That always helps. Email me, JC at JCOnTheLine.com. Facebook, The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran. Have a good day. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
We're fortunate enough to have an extra bedroom that she sleeps in during the week. And then during the weekend, it is on.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.